And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. One day is October 23rd, 296th day of the year. 297 in leap years. 69 days remain till the end of the year. And it's been an interesting date in history. 4004 BC. This was James Usher's proposed creation date of the world according to the Bible. Now, James Usher was the Church of England Archbishop of Armagh and the Primate of all Ireland. A scholar and a church leader who's today most famous for his identification of the genuine letters of the Church Father Ignatius of Antioch, and for his chronology that sought to establish the time and date of the creation as the entrance of the night preceding the 23rd day of October, the year before Christ, 4004. In other words, about 6 p.m. on October 22nd, 4004 B.C., the earth was created. 42 B.C., Liberator Civil War. Mark Antony and Octavian decisively defeat Brutus's army. Brutus commits suicide. 425 A.D., Valentinian III is elevated as Roman Emperor at the age of 6. Most kids are playing in the sandbox. He's the emperor. 501, the Synodus Pomaris, called by Gothic King Theodoric, absolves Pope Symmachus of all charges, which ends the schism of Antipope Laurentius. 1086, Spanish Reconquista. At the Battle of Sagrasas, the Almoravids defeat the Castilians, but are unable to take advantage of their victory. 1157, the Battle of Great Heath ends a civil war in Denmark. 1295, the first treaty among the old alliance between Scotland and France against England is signed in Paris. Now, the old alliance, for those that are not familiar, was an alliance between the kings of Scotland and France for the purpose of defeating England's numerous invasions. The Scots word auld, A-U-L-D, meaning old, had become a partly affectionate term for the long-lasting association between two countries. And although it was never officially revoked, it's considered by some to have ended with the signing of the Treaty of Edinburgh. The the Irish Catholic gentry from Ulster attempt to seize control of Dublin Castle, the seat of English rule in Ireland, so as to force concessions. 1642, the Battle of Edge Hills, the first major battle of the English Civil War. The ...1707, the first Parliament of Great Britain convenes. 1739, the War of Jenkins' Ear began with Prime Minister Walpole reluctantly declares war on Spain. 'Twas fought mainly in New Granada among the West Indies of the Caribbean. Major operations largely ended by 1742. Its name, which was coined by British historian Thomas Carlyle in 1858, refers to Robert Jenkins, who was captain of a British merchant ship. And when Spanish sailors boarded his ship, they cut off his ear. Now, there's no evidence to really support the story that the severed ear was exhibited before the British Parliament, but that was the Okay, in 1812, a French general begins a conspiracy to overthrow Napoleon. He claimed the emperor actually died in Russia, and that was someone pretending to be the emperor. 1850, the first National Women's Rights Convention begins in Worcester, Massachusetts. 1864, American Civil War, the Battle of Westport's the last significant engagement west of the Mississippi River. 1906, Alberto Santos Dumont flies an airplane in a heavier-than-air flight, in the first heavier-than-air flight in Europe. 1911, the Italo-Turkish War sees the first use of an airplane in combat when an Italian pilot makes a reconnaissance flight. 1912, First Balkan War. The Battle of Kumanovo between the Serbian and the Ottoman armies begins. 1942, Allied forces commence the Second Battle of El Alamein, which proves to be the key turning point in the North African campaign. 1942. Now, as I understand, Rommel wasn't there, but it was his tactics that were defeated. 1942, all 12 passengers and crewmen aboard American Airlines Flight 28 are killed when it collides with a United States Army Air Force bomber near Palm Springs, California. Also in 1942, the Battle for Henderson Field begins on Guadalcanal. 1944, the Battle of Leyte Gulf begins. 1955, Prime Minister Diem defeats former Emperor Bao Dai in a referendum and founds the Republic of Vietnam. 1955, the people of the Saar region vote in a referendum to unite with Germany instead of France. 1956, secret police shoot several anti-communist protesters, which ignited the Hungarian Revolution. 1958, Canada's Spring Hill mining disaster kills 75 miners. 95 others are rescued. 1965, Vietnam War. The 1st Cavalry Division, Air Mobile, in conjunction with South Vietnamese forces, launches an operation seeking to destroy communist forces during the siege of Plemy. 1970, Gary Gablik sets a land speed record in a rocket-powered automobile called the Blue Flame. It was fueled with natural gas. 1972, Vietnam War, Operation Linebacker. The U.S. bombing campaign against North Vietnam begins in response to its Easter offensive, and it ends after 5 months. 1973, Watergate scandal. Nixon agrees to turn over subpoenaed audio tapes of his Oval Office conversations. 1982, gunfight breaks out between police officers and members of a religious cult in Arizona. The shootout leaves 2 cultists dead and dozens of cultists and police officers injured. 1983, Lebanese Civil War. U.S. Marines barracks in Beirut's hit by a truck bomb. 241 military personnel are killed. French Army barracks in Lebanon's also hit that same morning, killed 58 others. 1989, Hungarian Republic officially replaces the Communist Hungarian People's Republic. 1989, bankruptcy of Wärtsilä Marine, the largest bankruptcy in the Nordic countries up to that point. 1991, signing of the Paris Peace Accords that ends the Cambodian-Vietnamese War. 1993, the Troubles. Provisional IRA bomb prematurely detonates in Belfast, kills the bomber and 9 civilians. 1995, Yolanda Saldivar is found guilty of first-degree murder in the shooting death of popular Latin singer Selena. Saldivar actually worked for her, but she was, as I understand it, skimming from the profits. 1998, Israel and the Palestinian Authority signed the Y River Memorandum. 1999, which was an agreement negotiated between Israel and the Palestinian Authority at a summit in Wild River, Maryland. It aimed to resume the implementation of the 1995 interim agreement on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, which was signed by Netanyahu and Yasser Arafat. On November 17, 1998, Israel's 120-member parliament, the Knesset, approved the memorandum. And it was going to go into effect November 2nd, 1998. It wasn't, shall we say, a major success. Okay. 2002, Chechenian terrorists seize the House of Culture Theater in Moscow and take 700 theater goers hostage. 2004, a powerful earthquake and its aftershocks hit Niigata Prefecture in northern Japan. 35 are killed, 2,200 injured, 85,000 left homeless or evacuated. 2007, a storm causes the Mexican Cobb 101 oil platform to collide with a wellhead, leading to the death and drowning of 22 people during rescue operations after they were evacuated by the storm off the platform. 2011, a 7.2 magnitude earthquake strikes Van province in Turkey. 582 are killed and thousands are injured. 2011, the Libyan National Transition Council deems the Libyan civil war is over. They waved their magic wand and they stopped it. 2015, the lowest sea level pressure in the Western Hemisphere and the highest reliably measured non-tornadic sustained winds are recorded in Hurricane Patricia, which strikes Mexico hours later, kills 13, caused over $280 million in damages. Very large number of births and deaths on this date in history, which we will not go into. Holidays and observances: Christian Feast Day, Feast of the Most Holy Redeemer, James the Just, the brother of Jesus, celebrated in the Lutheran and Episcopal churches in the U.S., Alusio of Campogliano, Amon of Toul, Anicius Manilus Severinus Bothus, Giovanni da Capistrano, Ignatius of Constantinople, Josephine de Rue, Peter Pasquale, Romanus of Rouen, Severatus and Sermatus, Severin of Cologne, Christmas or the Feast of Senior Noema in the Apostolic Catholic Church. Aviator's Day in Brazil, Julian Longhorn Day in Thailand, Day of the Macedonian Revolutionary Struggle in the Republic of North Macedonia, Liberation Day in Libya,
motion detected at the front door,
Mole Day internationally observed, National Day in Hungary, and the Paris Peace Agreement Day in Cambodia. We will see what else we have on this particular date in history. Okay. In 585, the Burgundy King Guntram opens the Synod of Macon. In 787, the Byzantine Empress Irene recovers the iconoclastic cult at Nicaea. In 1091, a tornado strikes the heart of London, demolishes the wooden London Bridge. In 1157, the Battle of Graath Heath ends the civil war in Denmark. King Solon III is killed and Vladimir I restores the country. 1520, King Carlos I is crowned German Emperor Charles V. 1588, the remnants of Medina Sidonia's Spanish Armada returns to Santander. 1641, is an outbreak of the Irish Rebellion of 1641, Catholic uprising in Ulster. 1642, the Battle of Warwickshire King Charles I beat the English parliamentarian forces. In 1679, there's what was called the Meal Tub Plot against James, Duke of York, who became James II of England. 1694, American colonial forces led by Sir William Phipps failed to seize Quebec. 1702, at the Battle of the Bay of Vigo, Dutch and English fleet destroy and occupy Spanish silver fleet and a French squadron. 1790, there was a major revolt in Haiti by the slaves, later suppressed. 1813, the Pacific Fur Company trading post in Astoria, Oregon, is turned over to the rival British Northwest Company. The fur trade in the Pacific Northwest was dominated for the next 30 years by the United Kingdom. 1814, the first plastic surgery was performed in England. 1819, the first ship sails through the Erie Canal from Rome, New York, to Utica, New York. 1854, the English newspaper, The Times, gives precise British positions in Crimea during the Crimean War, which, of course, was very useful to the other side. 1876, the New Orleans Mint reopens as an assay office. 1917, the 1st Infantry Division, known as the Big Red One, shoots the first U.S. shot in World War I. 1933, John Dillinger and his gang robbed Central National Bank in Greencastle, Indiana. They got away with $75,000, which was a considerable sum in those days. 1935, gangsters Dutch Schultz, Abe Landau, Otto Berman, Bernard Lulu Lozenkrantz were fatally shot at a saloon in Newark, New Jersey. This became known as the Chop House Massacre. 1941, and I'm sure you all want to know this, Walt Disney's animated film Dumbo is released for the first time. 1944, Vice Admiral Takeo Kurita's flagship, the heavy cruiser Otago, is sunk during the Battle of Leyte Gulf. 1958, the Smurfs first appear in the story Johan and Pierrot by Belgian cartoonist Payot. 1978, Rocker Sid Vicious attempts suicide while at Rikers Detention Center. got anything that's remotely important on this date. Okay, we're talking about the ghost of El Paso. And we've been talking about the Hotel Paso del Norte. Now, Zach White's original Hotel Paso del Norte has been held to him several times over the years. The current entrance and registration desk is in the new addition. 1986, the Dome Bar was built directly beneath that exquisite Tiffany Dome, for which the hotel is so well known. And as a result of this conversion of the lobby area into a bar, the original entrance to the hotel opens directly into the Dome Bar, and it's rarely used. Now, as I talked about yesterday, the Hotel Paso del Norte actually took over the space the L&A Theater occupied. Now, for 20 years, every Saturday night, I did ghost tours in El Paso. And I started them at the Camino Real, or the Hotel Paso del Norte. And in one conversation, I discovered Alice. In fact, her picture's on the cover of one of my books. She haunts the sixth floor routinely, but she was photographed on the third floor. And one of the managers sent me that photograph. Alice died in the hotel many, many years ago. And now she haunts one particular room. That's her room. And according to the folks in the restaurant, she'll call down for room service quite often. And when you get there, of course, there's no one in the room. A number of folks have checked in and, before the night was over, checked out. Because they woke up to find Alice standing over the bed staring at them. A number of people who've stayed on the sixth floor talk about hearing children playing in the hallway, but when they check, there's never anyone there. Now, a number of years ago, when they were building the tower, they were using a crane to bring material up from the street. And El Paso, in spite of rumors to the contrary, has high winds from time to time. And on this one particular day, the wind was so strong it snapped the cables on the crane, and it fell and landed on top of the extension that encloses a number of rooms as well as part of the restaurant. And one of the cables snaked out and wrapped around a worker and brought him off the room as well, off the roof as well. Well, instead of rolling him off so that he hit the ground. I mean, they could have cleaned that up with a hose. They thought they were going to bring him in through one of the rooms on the sixth floor. And that room is now haunted. The TV will turn on and off. They'll hear people knocking on the door, but there's never anyone there. The water in the shower will turn on and off. There was one lady who complained about the fact that she was hearing strange sounds. But she never found anybody. Now, this isn't the only hotel that has things like that. In San Antonio, there was a lady who was actually a big business tycoon from El Paso, and she normally traveled with her husband on this particular... And as I say, she was staying there by herself, and she was so accustomed to traveling with her husband, when she woke up in the early hours of the morning and felt someone up against her back, she assumed it was her husband. And then as she was becoming more and more alert, she realized she was there by herself, so who was in bed with her? And as she laid there, afraid to open her eyes, whoever it was rolled off the bed, and she heard him cross the carpet into the bathroom, heard the door shut, the shower come on, and she said, when telling the story, she said, there was two things I could do. I could get up and go see who it was, or I could call security. And since I wasn't dressed, I decided to go see who it was myself. She said I went over to the bathroom and listened, and I could hear somebody in the shower. I opened the door and peeked in, and the shower curtain was drawn and the water was running. So I went over, grabbed the curtain, ripped it open. Nobody there. There's also, in that particular hotel, a housekeeper who died in an accident, but comes back to straighten up the rooms, and she'll come and turn your bed down, even leave a chocolate mint on the pillow, but she's been dead for a good many years. Now, at the Camino Real, there have been a lot of sightings, and I talked about the party that everybody hears. Now, Ben Dowell was El Paso's first mayor. He had a saloon that stood where the Dome Bar stands. And quite often he is seen wandering around the hotel, and he's been spotted and identified. He has a habit of appearing in closets and other odd places, scaring the daylights out of housekeepers who come upon him unexpectedly. Then I asked, when I was talking to Ms. Camp, who was the director of sales, I asked about the stories about Doris suddenly appearing on the mezzanine level. She says she had heard from housekeeping that unexplained doorways and stairways have appeared at different locations throughout the hotel, where there may have been once a door or stairway, but doesn't exist today. She hadn't heard the story I related to of a housekeeper hearing a party going on behind one of the closed doors, but she agreed with me that if there's a party, let's see who's at it. I then asked about the mural around the Dome Bar where the lady allegedly walked out of the wall. And she replied that she knew of a large photograph, but not a mural in the bar area. She said there is a faded artwork in what was the 10th floor ballroom, but she couldn't think of any murals in the lobby area. I asked about seeing the artwork in the ballroom. She replied it was no longer open to the public, as what was the original ballroom is now an engineering room. And talking about the engineering department reminded her of a story a friend had told her. She said a man that she knew well who'd been working in the engineering department related the story. He'd been in the Dome Bar one day when the man in the bowler hat came into the bar and sat down beside him. Her friend said they had a very nice conversation of some length. And he thought he was talking to a guest who just liked to wear strange hats. So the man in the bowler hat got up, walked into the corner near the bar, and vanished. And she firmly believed her friend was certainly a credible witness. I asked about other stories she'd heard since joining the staff, and she said most of them dealt with the occurrences on the 10th floor or in the lobby, though, as she mentioned earlier in our conversation, the housekeepers talk about the man with the bowler hat appearing in various places around the hotel. And in retrospect, it's not a wild notion to think that the Hotel Paso del Norte, or the Camino Real, as it was called when I did the research, could or would be haunted. Much life and death in El Paso over the past 100 years has revolved around the hotel. And due to its location, the Hotel Paso del Norte was a virtual center of life in early El Paso. Now, on April 14th, 1881, it was a famous event. It was called Four Men Shot Dead in 5 Seconds. It began with the murder of a former Texas Ranger named Crippow by Johnny Hale, manager of the Mannings Ranch, a man on trial already for murder of 2 Mexicans. Now, some of the testimony had been in Spanish, and Crippow had acted as translator for the court. Hale didn't like what was said and chose to accost Crippow during the noon recess with a hidden gun that had been smuggled to him by his friends. So in his famous shootout, Johnny Hale killed Crippow. Dallas Studenmile pearled his weapons and shot at Hale, but killed a man named Lopez, an innocent bystander. Then he fired again and killed Hale. George Campbell, ex-city marshal and an enemy of Studenmile, chose to draw on the marshal. Studenmile killed Campbell. Out of such confusion, legends are made, and the death of an innocent man is forgotten in the excitement. Now, Ms. Camp allowed me to wander the hotel and talk to some of the other staff. A very cute young lady named Rosemary Coigny worked at the front desk had a story about a guest staying on the 16th floor directly below the presidential suite, which is located on the 17th floor. She was working the graveyard shift one night, and the guest called down to complain about the noisy party and the loud piano music coming from the floor above that was keeping him awake. Well, as is customary, security was dispatched to the suite, but discovered it was empty. There was no party, and no one was playing the grand piano that was located in the presidential suite. But at the same time, in the room below, the sounds of the party could still be heard. I then talked to Robert Diaz, director of security for the hotel. He related two incidents he'd been involved in during his time on the job. A new manager had been transferred to El Paso and was living in the hotel while looking for a house in town. One afternoon, she and her daughter went to the pool, which is located on the 10th floor. Upon her arrival, she saw somebody she thought was suspicious, a lady who appeared extremely angry, and she stood outside the only door to the pool area and called down to security. Now, this angry lady was just pacing up and down and up and down beside the pool. She would glare and wave her arms and carry on. So two officers were dispatched to check on the lady. When they arrived at the 10th floor pool, there was no one in that area. Assuming she may have gotten out and left by one of the stairs, they checked the stairs all the way down to the street level and never found anybody. She couldn't have gotten out of the pool area without being seen. Now, there are cameras at the pool level, and the cameras caught her. And as she walked into an area that is actually the cameras can't see and never came out. The other incident happened during the construction of the new floors in the tower. There was night security furnished by the contractor to make sure the tools were safe. And one night, the contractors called by hotel security and told that the security furnished by the contractor run off the job, and that one man had kept running till he got to the street and disappeared. And apparently he was the one that sparked the initial panic, and they couldn't find him. Well, finally, the guard that had disappeared was found and questioned, and he said that his job had been to provide security for the 17th floor. He said he'd been warned not to shut the doors along the halls. It had all just been painted, and it was feared they'd stick shut. Workers' tools were stored in several rooms, so he just sat in the hallway and made sure that nobody got into the rooms or stole any of the tools or shut in the doors. He said he'd been sitting by a window reading a book, and one of the doors, being held open by a doorstop, suddenly slammed shut. Well, he got up and opened the door and replaced the doorstop and went back to his book. A few minutes, he glanced back to see the doorstop from one of the rooms slide across the floor and that door slammed shut. Curious, thinking a friend might be playing a joke on him, he went down and reopened that door and replaced the doorstop and searched the entire floor. Didn't find anybody. Went back to his book, and all was peaceful for a few minutes, and in unison, every door slammed shut. At that point, he panicked and ran screaming down the stairs. The guard on the 16th floor heard him run by, and he started running down the stairs behind him, thinking if something had scared him that bad, he didn't need to be there either. And then the guard on the 15th floor also started to run behind them. And all anybody knew for sure was they weren't going back into that building. Another instance, and I talked about this earlier, a crane fell from the roof, taking a worker with it. Now, do certain death scenes replay themselves over and over? Does a place that has a lot of unexplained death attract others in susceptible frames of mind? Several hotels in town, to include the Camino, have been the scenes of repeated unexplained suicides. Is there a connection? No one really knows for sure. Now, moving from hotels, we have Foxglove Apartments, which is located on Red Road. Now, I've heard a lot of stories about this location, but solid information is kind of sketchy. But late at night, you can hear what sounds like a cat jumping around on the furniture in the living room in one of the apartments. And occupants have seen large fleeting shadows out of the corner of their eyes, but when they immediately search, they can't find anyone or anything. And they've also heard the sounds of books slamming to the floor in the bedroom that have been heard while the occupants are in bed. No one knows for sure what led to this haunting, but There's no question there is activity there. Then we have the J.C. Machaca Apartments, which is off Sunland. A friend told me about this location. He says he's heard that these old apartments have been built on an ancient Indian burial ground. He said he'd heard that late at night, residents have actually heard footsteps and seen dark, shadowy figures moving about in their apartments. And there have been reports of things flying across the room, and things have been moved from their original place. Interestingly enough, I can't find any record of the existence of these apartments, so he's positive that was the name of this location. Eventually, I found them. Not anywhere near where I was told they would be, but they are located off of Sunland. Then we have Laguna's Restaurant. Now, the building that was occupied by Laguna Restaurant is and was in a good spot for business. Located in the middle of a huge parking lot, it sits immediately next door to a large hotel, the Embassy Suites. It's a very convenient lunch and dinner spot for a large number of businesses and office buildings. And it's immediately across Interstate 10 from one of the three main malls in El Paso. So you have to ask yourself why it's quite often closed. Good three restaurateurs have been mistaken, one after the other, as to how good that location was. Or is there something else at play here? But this wasn't the first eatery to close its doors this location. When it was first built, it was called Smuggler's Inn. Then it was a Bombay Bicycle Club. And then Laguna's moved in. And by the time I put this story together, Laguna's had closed. Each started with high hopes. Each ended with closed doors and for lease signs on the roof. Now, this building that was built for enjoyment, the boisterous camaraderie of good friends and the consuming of good food, is closed now. Its doors bolted shut, its tables and chairs dusty, and its parking lot empty. According to Ward Cosgrove, who worked there as a busboy and whose sister was the manager of the Bombay Bicycle Club, a lot of unexplained things happened at this place. When the restaurant had been Smuggler's Inn, an old man had a heart attack and died on the upper floor. Since that time that happened, a lot of strange things have taken place. He said in the kitchen, soup ladles would move across the room and fall on the floor. One night, two new managers were sitting in the office after closing time. Both of them saw an old man walk past the office door. They immediately went to see who he was and what he was doing in the restaurant, which was already closed for the night. They couldn't find anybody, though they both were sure they had seen him. One of the bartenders saw a glowing figure that scared him to death. About 2 or 3 in the morning, Ward's sister heard someone running back and forth across the roof of the building. She went outside to see what was going on, and there was nobody to be seen either on the roof or in the parking lot. One witness reported she was cleaning the bar area and moving each stool away from the bar to clean underneath it. When she got to one particular stool, though, she said she couldn't move it. Said it felt like there was somebody sitting on that stool. Ward said one night in the downstairs dining, he'd been removing dirty napkins from the table and replacing the silverware. He'd put the dirty napkin in his pocket and placed the clean silverware on the table. At one table, he removed the napkin and went to get clean silverware because he'd run out. When he came back, he found that there was a napkin lying on the table where he had just removed it. He said this happened several times. There was no one else nearby that could have put a napkin on the table. The last event he told me about happened in the downstairs dining room. He and a waitress named Barbara were the only two around the area. He was bussing tables when he felt someone lick his ear. Startled, he turned to Barbara, wanting to know what she was doing, and she swore she hadn't touched him, and in fact, she was halfway up the stairs. He never found out who or what had licked his ear. So does the old man wander around a dark and closed building where he died, or has he gone on to a better place? Be interesting to find out. Then we have a historic building known as the Cortez Building. Located on the northeast corner of North Mesa Street and Mills Avenue, it's the 11-story Cortez Building takes the shape of an L-shaped block about the second story, with 12 bays facing Mesa and 10 bays facing Mills. Now, while this building was never ranked as one of Trost's more artistic designs, it did incorporate one original feature not found in any of the building of the period. Peering out of the rondelles above the Mesa Street entrance is a series of portrait heads of conquistadors. Now, this hotel was erected at a cost. Originally, it was a hotel. Now, it's an office building. It was erected at a cost of $1.5 million for Alzina Orndorff de Groff, a hotel operator well known in Tucson and El Paso. This new hotel, to be called the Hotel Orndorff, was the third hotel to bear that name and the second Orndorff hotel to occupy that same spot of land. Said that between the cost of the building, the hotel, and the rich furnishings, that Alzina Orndorff de Groff spent about $6 million. One week before the opening of the Grand Orndorff Hotel in 1926, Alzina Orndorff de Groff took some time off, which was unusual for her. She went for a buggy ride around town, got caught in a freak rainstorm that came down with pneumonia and died before the grand opening she'd so looked forward to. Even so, it's been said by a lot of folks that she still watches over her dream hotel. And changes, let me tell you, are unwelcome in this hotel. In the lobby, workers have maintained that they feel the presence of others even when they're alone, and most feel the presences come and go up and down the stairs. There have been reports of reflections of people being seen in the gleaming metalwork of the elevators who are not in the elevators. Connie Wang, who I worked with in writing my first book on El Paso, used to go through the building of the El Paso Ghost Tour and was very friendly with the security guard. One day she saw him walk past her without speaking and round the corner into one of the halls, and she followed him to see if something was wrong. But when she got to the corner, only a second behind him, the hallway was empty. She later found out he hadn't even been at work that day. He was home ill. So the question becomes, who or what had she seen? Children had been seen and heard playing in the hallways when there are no children in the building. One of them is Joseph, the little boy who loves to ride his cycle in the lobby area. If approached, he'll race around the corner and vanish, much the same way the guard Connie Wang saw does, or did. There was once a fast food restaurant located in one of the retail areas of the building. The night crew would complain of people coming to the counter, placing an order, and then vanishing when the worker turned around to fill that order. I'm told that some employees absolutely refused to work the night shift. In the ballroom in this grand building, a woman dressed in a ball gown from another era sits weeping, but if she's approached, she'll rise and walk into the shadows where there's no doorway, and then she disappears. Was this perhaps once the location of a doorway that is no more? It's been theorized that at this location there's a portal to another dimension where once wedding and parties were held. Maybe some of these entities are caught in between worlds, so to speak, doomed forever to try and get back to their home, but always failing. There were reports of a room off the cloakroom where there seems to be some type of portal or energy vortex. Several psychics that I've talked with who've explored that area have called this a doorway. But the question is, a doorway to where? Then there's the Mills Building, which is on North Oregon. Now, the site of the Mills Building has been seen numerous uses over the hundreds of years that El Paso del Norte has been occupied. This was the site where once Ponce de Leon had his ranch and where one of El Paso's premier hotels, the Grand Central Hotel, was erected. On February 11, 1892, this historic hotel was totally destroyed by a raging fire. According to spectators, there were guests of the hotel who jumped from the third and fourth story balconies and room windows while the hotel stairs and hallways burned behind them. I've had several reports that, in fact, the fire exits were chained shut. No one knows who did that. The El Paso Volunteer Fire Department tried violently to save the structure and those trapped inside, but theirs was a losing battle. The screams of the dying echoed through the streets of this city for several hours till the raging inferno died down to white-hot ashes. I've been told of several former workers in the building who've had encounters with figures dressed in the styles of bygone eras, and voices have been heard in empty rooms. Do the spirits of those who died in the Grand Central Hotel fire still linger at the site of their death? A lot of life and death have taken place on the spot where the Mills Building sits. Be interesting to know who now walks its deserted hallways. Now, the building has been renovated a number of times. When they were doing the last renovation... I knew a number of people who had worked in that building before it became empty and then went in for renovation. One had been a secretary, and she said she'd go in on Saturdays to try to catch up on her paperwork. And she'd hear people walking up and down the halls, and she'd look out the door and see people wearing nightgowns. And she'd try to go see who they were, and they'd get around the corner before she could get to them, and when she'd get there, there'd be nobody there. She also smelled smoke. And a number of people told me the same thing. In the lobby, that used to be part of the electric company. People go there to pay their bills. And at one point in time, the religious fanatics in town wanted the building torn down because they said it was the home of evil. Because up around the area at the top of the wall had some very ornate bats all around the
motion detected at the front door.
The ceiling area, and it got so bad that the electric company had them painted over, and they were found when they did the renovation, and they looked as bright and beautiful as they ever did. So apparently, being painted over for 50, 60 years had no impact. The theater incorporated on Texas Avenue, or the Aardvark Theater, was located in a building on Texas Avenue. According to a news story, in addition to the legal tenants, that same building has long had more permanent tenants in the form of a male and female ghost. According to the article, which was written by Pat Henry in the El Paso Times, said Halloween night just wouldn't be the same without a spook story or two, and El Paso has several tall tales to call its own. For example, the folks at Theater Incorporated have had a few run-ins with ghosts. According to John Bilbona, Executive Artistic Director, we do have a ghost, several in fact, that have been quite active. As I understand it, there's a man and a woman down here whose appearances have been going on for years and years. People say in the office, who stay late in the office and hear a noise or something being thrown or bouncing around, and when they'd go investigate, there'd never be anybody there. One story says that somebody would notice a block of wood on the stage and later hear a noise and would investigate. The block would be someplace else, but nobody was around. He said he had shrugged off the story till his own wife had a brush with one of the ghosts. A couple of weeks after they moved in there, Billy, which was her name, met the man ghost one night. She was in the kitchen area and she heard somebody come down the hall. She yelled, "John, is that you?" She saw a person walking down the hallway, and when she turned around and looked again, that person was gone. When just one person reports seeing a ghost, it's usually written off as weird shadows or strange light reflections, but there have been group sightings at the theater as well. Recently, Billy, board member and set designer Glenn O. Brooks, and a set builder, J.E. Guadalupe, were in the back room where Glenn had his shop, and they were just yakking and hanging out when they saw something or someone walk by the door. Of course, they thought it was the executive director coming back to talk to him, and they called out, "Hey, John," but there was no answer. But they did see something. Figuring they'd catch him playing a prank, one of them went out one door and another went out another door, and they all came around from opposite directions, but there was no one there. The only thing they did find was an ice-cold chill in the hallway. Brooks also reported seeing a female ghost in the building. Glenn was taking a set apart one night, and he got an eerie feeling while standing on stage. When he turned around and faced the light booth above the audience, he saw there was a young girl up there smiling down at him. Besides that, when they were taking down the set for a view from the bridge, Glenn was there taking pictures of the set before taking it apart. Billy was up in the light booth, and he quickly turned around and snapped a picture of her up there. When the pictures came back, the print looked like he got an image of a ghost. Everybody's seen the picture, says they can pick out the arms and the legs. It's kind of a shady image, and it does look like a ghost. But some would argue it isn't. In spite of that, strange things do happen, and nobody can argue with that. Bill Bona said it can be fairly disconcerting to work in a building and with a history of ghost sightings. But all the people that work there take the stories with a grain of salt. Until they have to stay late by themselves. At first, everyone gets told these stories, and every reaction is, yeah, whatever. But when somebody has to stay late, the refrain is, there's no such thing as ghosts, but could you stay here with me a little longer? You just never know what might pop up. Now, Theater Incorporated, at the time I put together the stories, was no longer occupying the building at 1301 Texas. To all appearances, it's forlorn and abandoned. But according to the wording on the theater building, it's now the home of a company called the Aardvark Theater. Maybe the ghost misses the excitement of the theater. Then on Montana, we have El Paso Playhouse. It also has a ghost who sometimes plays tricks on the staff members. The ghost at the playhouse is known by two names. One name is a traditional stage name of George Spelvin. Longer tradition in the theater, Spelvin was a stage name assumed by actors who didn't want to be recognized by creditors or irate fathers and husbands in a particular community. The name would be printed on the playbills in place of the actor's real name. Over the years, this stage name has been applied to the spirits that seem to haunt many of the old theaters. The George Spelvin that haunts the El Paso Playhouse has also been identified by company members as John, a technician who was allegedly accidentally killed during the performance. According to the article, no one really remembers the accident, but everybody's heard about it. Surprisingly, many of those associated with the playhouse treat George or John, whatever you want to call him, as a friend. According to the article in the El Paso Times, Mary Magny, associated with amateur theater for at least 20 years, stages a running banter with George John. Sort of comfortable to know he's around, she said. He's never heard a show. Theater ghosts never hurt shows, but some of the strangest things have happened. Disappearances mostly. A light cue sheet, a purse. Company turns the theater upside down looking for the lost article and finds it in plain sight. During the run of Fiddler on the Roof in 1976, Ms. Magny, who played Nyenta, got fed up with John. She said, knock it off. You got a problem? Give me a call. The next time she reached for Yenta's black silk stocking, she found a nickel in the toe. Everybody figured it was John's way of getting in touch. Phone calls used to be a nickel. But they have gone up, she told John. One afternoon, Ms. Magny and two other company members heard John calling, hello, hello, clear as a bell. When they searched, there wasn't a soul to be found. So George, or John, whichever name you want to associate with him, was certainly making an effort to communicate. But Ms. Magny wasn't the only witness to such goings-on at the El Paso Playhouse. We have another article that discusses the activities of George, or John. Written by Pat Henry, the headline was Spooked Actors Insist Stage Fright is No Act. Louise Gard, a Playhouse board member and director, said she's known about George since he began working there in 1971. She said, I'd heard about George from the others who worked there, and he's basically a friendly ghost, and that most anyone who's ever witnessed that, what was out of the ordinary, is lights being turned off and on by themselves, or somebody hearing noises in the lighting booth when there's nobody there. Gard's own interaction with George occurred one night when she was working alone, painting a canvas for a set. She said it was probably 2 a.m. and a huge thunderstorm had moved in, and lightning was all over the place. After one particular intense lightning flash, the lights flickered as if they were about to go out, but they stayed on, even though the neighborhood around the theaters lost power. She thought George was looking out for her by keeping the lights on somehow. Though she never actually saw George that night, she was acutely aware of an eerie presence near her on other occasions in the theater. I've also been told that before the playhouse, the building was a church, and there was a ghost tradition associated with that particular church. Seems there may be the ghost of a baby around who had drowned in the baptistry, where the stage is now in the playhouse. Playhouse mainstay Jan Wolf has heard the stories as well. She said, invariably, weird occurrences happen to those who work there late at night. Ladders fall down or lights come on for no reason. I know of an instance many years ago, she said, where Laura Burkhart was by herself at night, was standing on top of the ladder, which started to tip over. Had it fallen, she would have been badly hurt. All of a sudden, the ladder came back upright as if somebody kept it from falling. Of course, there's no way to prove this since she was alone, but it does make you wonder. Then in the Toltec building, there's the upstairs theater. Toltec building's located at the junction of San Antonio Street and McGoffin Avenue. The club was organized November 19th, the Toltec Club, as it was called, 1902, and was incorporated as a social club under the laws of the state of Texas. The building that houses the social club was built at about the same time. The club was governed by a board of 12 managers who ensured that the club's rules were rigidly followed by all the members. Now, the Toltec Club was an exclusive club with membership limited at any one time to no more than 300 resident members and 200 non-resident members. Resident member was somebody who resided within 10 miles of the clubhouse. A non-resident member was classified as residing more than 10 miles from the clubhouse, or was an active or retired officer in the military or a clergyman. The Toltec Club was an exclusive male-only enclave similar to the British Gentleman's Club. Use of the clubhouse was restricted to members except for one room called the Visitor's Room. This was for visiting and not for conducting business. The use of the second floor of the club building, exclusive of the ballroom, was extended to the ladies of the immediate family of any member with permission of the club secretary. And, of course, the membership list led like a who's who of El Paso society, and it was a marked distinction to be a member of the Toltec Club. Well, alas, all things have a time and a place, and the Toltec Club faded into the mist of time. The building that had been the exclusive domain of the august members of the exclusive body fell into disuse before the ballroom was used for plays. This establishment came to be called the Upstairs Theater, and it achieved some limited fame for the quality of its performances. Now, the Upstairs Theater is no longer in operation, but at one time it provided a perfect setting for a ghost. The ornate grand ballroom of the Toltec Club. June Davidson learned of the ghost at the Upstairs Theater when she worked on a play called Bly Spirits. That's a play that actually spoofs the occult. Some incidents that took place in the Upstairs Theater were discussed in the El Paso Times. According to the article, we had a lot of trouble setting up the lights. We'd get yellow for green, and more fun to attribute it to our ghost George Spelvin prowling around. Miss Davidson pointed out that the Upstairs Theater was a perfect setting for a ghost. It was in the grand ballroom of the Toltec Building, historic men's club built at the turn of the century. Another El Paso thespian, Bill Logan, echoes Miss Davidson's assessment of the creepy atmosphere of the Upstairs Theater. He remembers some people heard disembodied screaming in the theater. He said, "I never did. A lot of things can be attributed to fatigue," he said. But he does have his own strange story. He believes Pancho Villa once lived next door to the Toltec Building. According to Logan, about 17 years ago, three of us were working there very late one night. In fact, early in the morning, we heard a jingling, went out in the hallway, nothing. Again, we heard that jingling, went out to see the... We could see the picture windows and balcony of the house next door. He said, "I swear to God, I saw a short figure on that balcony, had on a sombrero, and he was wearing guns. Jingling came from the spurs on his boots." I witnessed that. The three of us just looked at each other and none of us said a word. Then we have the Plaza Theater. But fortunately, we've run out of time, so we'll be talking about the Plaza Theater on Monday. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great weekend.